Hello. Welcome to the Above Average Irrelevance podcast. Today is Wednesday, July 12th, and this is episode 19. I'm Matt Weaver. I'm here with Scott Nelson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Scott. So minor technical difficulties this morning. My MacBook Pro, which we normally record this wonderful podcast on, appears to be suffering from a logic board failure, which is very sad.
Yeah.
This makes my second broken Mac at my house. They're breaking faster than I can repair them. I don't know what's actually wrong, but when I power it up, I get no chime of happiness. I get no chime at all. I just get a white screen. This is sad. It's doubly sad because if it is a logic board failure, then it's maybe not worth repairing my circa 2010 MacBook Pro, and it's probably worth buying a new one. But we're right on the cusp of new laptop hardware, so...
You couldn't possibly buy a MacBook Pro right now. You wouldn't do it, would you? But you're not big on first generation, so...
Well... But
that's something to weigh. You can either get the last generation of an awesome product or the first generation of the new hotness.
I don't like to wait. I don't know. Broken computers drive me crazy. Broken phones drive me crazy. I have lots of friends with broken phones in one form or another. And I just like, please, for the love of God, go to the Apple store and have them fix it. Please! Like, no, it's fine. I'm just going to live with it, you know, for another year and a half until I finally decide to get a new phone. Like, why would you suffer through such pain?
I've been watching this. Chelsea Handler has this show on Netflix. Have I told you about this before?
Maybe.
It's like a Netflix talk show. It's kind of a whole new concept. It's actually really cool. And I like her. I think she's funny. But she always does these bits where she says this, you know, this episode brought to you by, and it's just some inane bit, basically.
Yep.
But she did one and she was like, this episode brought to you by people with broken iPhone screens for something like for revealing to us that they are a total effing mess.
Yes.
Which is true. Most people I know that have broken iPhone screens are just like a lot more important things to worry about. Don't care.
Every time I break my iPhone, which is sadly more than zero, I can usually measure the time to repair
in minutes, hours?
In hours. Mostly because it takes 90 minutes from my house to drive to the nearest Apple store.
Right.
But, yeah, it's I do not mess about.
You know, I made a Genius Bar appointment to get my phone looked at because I was having these charging issues, which I'm still having.
Yeah.
And then circumstances did not allow me to go, and I did not cancel it. Am I in trouble now?
No.
Do you know what happens if you don't cancel a Genius Bar appointment?
You have to check in when you get there. So you just didn't check in and...
Somebody else took it.
Yeah. Some other poor soul.
I haven't gone to try and reschedule another one, and I was worried that it was going to say,
"Well,
you are banned."
I apparently need to go for my MacBook Pro.
Yeah, let's go to the Apple store.
We'll make some... We'll make some adjacent Genius Bar appointments.
Get all the devices repaired.
Ah. Okay, I can put aside my sorrow.
All right.
And we can talk about the podcast.
Sure.
I can't see what's on our list
of
things to talk
about.
Yeah,
you usually run the show here. So you had put a couple articles in the document here. One was about the movie The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, isn't that for next week or is that for this week?
Oh.
Yeah, that's for next week.
Is that for next week?
Man, you're totally getting ahead of yourselves.
So you're not prepared to talk about that?
I can, but are you?
Yeah. So now I brought it up.
Now, yeah. Okay. Let's
okay,
talk
we
got
to talk about that. I actually just saw that this morning, and I read it this morning. I didn't realize it was for next week, but then I'll close that so we don't do anything else next week. Well, the thing that surprised me the most, have we talked about this movie before?
I don't think so.
I love this movie.
I like it. I haven't seen it in a while. I thought maybe we could read the article and watch the movie and then talk about it next week.
Oh.
But we're just going to talk
okay,
about
no,
it
we'll
now.
Okay, no, we'll do that. Let's do that. Okay. Nope. Okay. No, it's off the table because I'm always up for rewatching that movie.
This week we were going to talk about like cancer and food.
Oh, right.
Because I posted this article that said, hey,
carbs.
We can't find any evidence that that supports the various claims about the low-carb diets.
Right.
Right? The all of these low-carb diet things are based off a theory, right? A model about how human nutrition might work. And so this study, what did they do? They like locked 17 people in a hospital for like 2 months or some crazy thing like this, right? And they completely monitor their entire food intake for the 2 months, right? They were given measured diets of everything, right? Everything about their lives was mm-hmm. monitored completely for 2 months in a hospital, you know, in a clinical setting. And there was not a significant metabolic change when they switched from a baseline diet, which they were on for a month, to a low-carbohydrate diet, which they were on for a month. And this seems to suggest that the low-carb diet fad, craze, theory, whatever you want to talk about, is not necessarily provable scientifically, which means that, much to the surprise of no one, I hope, that the biochemistry that goes on when you eat food is way more complicated than whether or not you're getting a lot of one macronutrient or not. I mean, it just seems obvious to me that when you eat food, you're ingesting about a bajillion different chemical compounds, mm-hmm. and they're going to interact with the bajillion chemical compounds inside you in a complicated way that you're not just going to tease out by mucking with, you know, one macronutrient. Right? I mean, we went through this in the 70s and 80s with, you know, fat. Everybody needs to have a low-fat diet. And then we figured right. out, that's actually kind of bullshit, right? So why should it be surprising that the same is true for carbohydrates?
Yeah, I had a really hard time reconciling this because I feel like I have read and have believed a lot of evidence that low-carb diets were the answer.
Well, so I have read, I have to admit, I have read part of the Atkins diet book. I had some friends mm-hmm. that did Atkins, and in an attempt to understand why they were doing this thing that I thought was a little crazy, I had to, mm-hmm. I read part of the book. I had to stop partway through because I felt like I understood the point he was trying to make and the sales pitch kind of became overwhelming. Right. I don't know if you've ever read this book, but, mm-hmm. And so this basic theory that, you know, you eat something with a lot of carbs or sugar in it and it produces an insulin response, which makes you hungry. I get, right? Like you can test this yourself, right? You can be perfectly normal, right, and then you can eat a single Oreo cookie, right, and you can feel yourself, even though you know intellectually, I'm not hungry. I wasn't hungry 5 minutes ago. I've now eaten some food. I'm not hungry, right? But you can feel, you know, your body's like, oh, right, you just had an Oreo cookie. That's sweet and sugary, and I want more of that, right? You can feel that happen, right? You can eat a big plate of pasta with nothing in it, just the pasta, and then you can eat a plate of pasta and put, you know, a low glycemic index food in it, like you know, broccoli or something like that, right? And you can feel and be aware of the difference in how your body reacts to that stuff. So there's clearly something there,
right? Right? That would imply, though, that the benefit of low carb is solely the carbs are no longer a catalyst to overeating, mm-hmm. essentially.
I know on the rare occasions when I eat a meal at McDonald's, the difference between having a cheeseburger and a small French fry versus a cheeseburger and like a 4-piece chicken nugget is tremendous in terms of how satiated I feel after the meal. Though the total calories, if you believe the calorie count, mm-hmm. On the McDonald's food packaging, isn't tremendously different. But the chicken nuggets have way fewer carbs and a lot more fat and protein in them than the French fries do. But the French fries are big, salty carbohydrate bars, right. right? And so if you eat a small French fry, what you want is a large French fry. So I get it.
Yeah, I feel like, though, in addition to, you know, like Atkins and paleo and that kind of stuff, I feel like there was a scientific movement. There was that, what's his name, Pearsig, that whole sugar is evil movement. There was Gary Tobbs's Why We Get Fat.
Well, this movement. Isn't saying that sugar isn't evil.
Yeah.
What this is saying is that a low-carbohydrate diet doesn't cause the type of changes in your body to switch to burning more calories and all that other stuff.
So this is saying that if calorie restriction is how you're going to manage your diet, it doesn't matter what those calories are. Essentially.
Well,
right?
I think you're reaching even more than what they're saying. What they're saying is a low-carbohydrate diet doesn't produce a greater amount of weight loss than any other form of diet. Which can be different than I went on a low-carbohydrate diet by cutting out the candy bars and cookies and full-sugar soda I was drinking all day, every day. And lo and behold, I lost weight.
So, I mean, that ends up being simple calorie restriction, not really...
Yeah, well, they get at the end of the article, they said, you know, what this really means is people should focus on the quality of the food that they eat, right? Which gets back to forks over knives, right? Eat some vegetables.
Right.
Right.
That's the thing. If you're paying attention to quality, then you aren't going to eat a lot of pasta anyway, because why would you eat something made from, you know, processed wheat flour?
Yeah, well, maybe. That's having a plate of pasta is better than having, I don't know, some, you know, super
cake?
Processed. Well, not
Twinkies?
Even just, yeah, Twinkie, right? I mean... I don't know. There's a... It's a fascinating article, right?
It is, and it kind of made me think, you know, I've had a lot of kind of like emotional attachment, maybe, or personal, you know... I've personally advocated for low-carb diet, and
yep.
I personally believe that that is the best,
yep.
you know, lifestyle. So then you read something like this, and it makes me question... whether or not that's right. So I guess I'm back to, I just need to do what works for me,
yeah.
what makes me feel healthy, and not advocate for one thing or another, not get in arguments about diet because I'm not sure I'm right. So,
the friends of mine who are on Atkins lost a lot of weight doing it. And I determined watching them do it, and I was happy for them to lose the weight. Their big hang-up was fear of being hungry, for which a lot of people have this fear, right? And so your basic calorie restriction diet doesn't work so well for them because it creates this anxiety about, you know, I've only got 1,800 calories today and, you know, I don't want to be hungry at 6:30, you know, and be hungry all night, which I get. Nobody likes to be hungry. So something like the Atkins diet, which let them eat the types of foods that they like to eat anyway, right? Without, you know, and the thing they had to cut out was the carbs, right? So goodbye pasta, you know, goodbye cakes and cookies, right? Which everybody likes, well, not everybody, lots of people like those things, and they like those things, but they're like, I'm willing to trade all that stuff and I can eat as much bacon as I want. So for them, it allowed them a type of diet that undoubtedly was a lower calorie count, but it allowed them to not have the anxiety of, I might be hungry, right? With the Atkins diet, you know, if it's the right type of beef jerky, right, with no sugar added, you can always just go have another piece of beef jerky if you're hungry. Mm-hmm. I get that. I personally have this fear of being hungry too. This is what often causes me to order too much food at a restaurant or overeat in some way, right? Because when I'm ordering, I'm fearful that what I order won't be enough food.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to force myself to say, you know what? Odds are what you're going to order is going to be enough food. And if you're still hungry, fatso, just order something else.
Mm-hmm.
The waitress will keep bringing you food until you are done or run out of money. Or both. So, so fear of not enough food is a real, it's a real anxiety. Do you have this fear? Do you worry about not having
I don't think
food?
So. I don't really identify with that.
What do you worry about? Nothing?
Like in general or diet-wise?
Diet-wise. I don't know if the podcast is long enough to talk about what you worry about in general.
Pull up a chair. yeah, I don't feel like my diet problems are driven by a worry of hunger at all. Mine are more just like... Mine's probably more of like just like a pleasure eating problem.
Mm.
You know, like I just really like to eat cheese and potato chips and, you know, bad food.
Cheese on
Oreo cookies.
Chips.
Yeah. I think mine's more of a traditional, it tastes good, I want to eat more.
Yeah.
Just an overindulgence problem.
Hmm.
So.
I can't explain my fear of not having enough food. I've been fortunate. I have never lived in an environment where I've ever had any food insecurity problems. Right? But let's be honest. I've grown up in middle America, mm-hmm. and my family has never been the Rockefellers, but we've never been so poor that there hasn't been food in the fridge at all times. Right? So... I can't explain it, but there it is.
I can't say this is going to change anything for me. I eat a pretty low-carb diet. I will continue with that. I'm not going to reintroduce pasta and bread. I mean, I haven't bought a loaf of bread in probably 3 years.
So... I've been eating this sprouted grain bread.
Oh, the Ezekiel?
Ezekiel, yeah.
That's good stuff.
And I like it because I have found that attempting a life without any bread at all, it's a pain in the butt.
Mm.
sometimes it's just easier just to make a sandwich. Right.
True.
I really don't want to spend a lot of time cooking or whatever, right? I just want to, you know, the Ezekiel bread comes frozen, right? I want to toast some bread. I want to slap some peanut butter on it, and I want to go. And this lets me do that. So.
So I guess this doesn't change, won't change my habits at all, this article, because it's not like I'm dying to get back to bread or I'm dying to get back to pasta, and now this gives me permission.
Yep.
I'm happy with the way I eat now, but... This does maybe change the amount that I'm willing to advocate for a low-carb diet. Because I just don't... I mean, they don't know. Nobody really knows. We've talked about this before. Like, the perfect human diet has not been decided.
My guess is there's no one perfect human diet at the end of the day.
Right.
Right. That I'm sure there's lots of things that people can eat and be fairly healthy.
Or unhealthy.
Yeah.
Okay, the next thing we had in the list, there was this article in the New York Times that the title was Helpless to Prevent Cancer? Actually, quite a bit is in your control. And it was kind of about kind of the proportion of cancer risk that is genetic or is based upon things that are outside your control and the proportion that is based on things you can control, like your environmental issues, your...
Right.
Diet, smoking, exercise, that kind of thing.
So I think most people are pretty sure that by choosing not to smoke, their likelihood of getting lung cancer is going to fall off dramatically. I think that's a fairly well-established thing in the average person's brain. Lots of other types of cancer, though, I don't know that people... have an association between their behavior and their likelihood of having that type of cancer. Though not surprisingly, does this article talk about how diet plays a role in a lot of this stuff?
It focused more on how obesity plays a role. It wasn't essentially how a specific food you're eating influences your cancer risk. It was more about, you know, chronic obesity and the effect that has on your cells, right? In the various parts of your body. So it didn't really dig into too, like, cancer-causing chemicals or agents in food, stuff like that. It was more about lifestyle choices you can make over time.
But its conclusion was there was, what, four major risk factors, right? Smoking was one of them. The amount of vigorous exercise you got in a given week. Obesity. And what was the fourth one?
Mm-hmm.
There were four major risk factors that they talked about. And essentially, if you could, you know, if you didn't smoke, if you did some exercise, and it was something like...
Drinking.
Oh, yeah.
Was the fourth one.
Drinking, right? But the drinking was, like, for men, it was less than two drinks a day on average. And for the exercise, it was 90 minutes a week or 120 minutes a week or something like that. Of not super crazy exercise, but, you know, just elevated heart rate type of exercise. And then not being obese, which didn't necessarily mean being perfectly thin, but it meant not being obese. Which, what did they say, like a BMI of under 30 or under 29?
Under 27.3.
Under 27, yeah. Basically, if you can be out of the... If you can, you know, get out of those four risk factors, then you have done, you know, you've gotten the most bang for your buck, right? You've done the minimum amount of effort lifestyle-wise to dramatically lower your chances of having a whole host of cancers, right, from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only... out of three of them, my BMI is above 27.
Right, same here. And this did get me thinking a lot about weight loss and about, you know, I am sometimes motivated to lose weight, other times less motivated. My weight yo-yos a little bit, but as that goes on for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, it's the time, the amount of time that you've spent, you know, in one of these high risk categories, that's the problem.
It compounds up.
Yeah. And I think that's what people sometimes forget. It's like, well, I can put off weighing less. I can put off drinking less. I can put off quitting smoking. And maybe smoking for another day or, you know, drinking heavily for another week or month isn't a big deal. But then it's when you continue to have that habit.
Yeah.
For 10 years, now you've significantly increased your cancer risk. So it got me thinking about that and, like, all this missed opportunity of living healthier. I don't know. Maybe it's time to get motivated again.
It can be hard, though. Like, yesterday, I was at a birthday party. A friend of mine turned 40. So we went to the local teppanyaki place, you know, as this friend group often does for birthdays, right? And I had an excellent meal, but it was, you know, the default amount of food that you get there is just a little bit too much. So, of course, you know, you eat it, but now you've eaten too much. And then we went for ice cream afterwards, right? So... you know, I mean, it's my fault, right? Because I'm the one that ordered all that food and ate it all. There's nobody forcing me to do it. But you're still in this social situation where, no, it's a birthday. Let's go eat at this restaurant and have good food that you're going to eat too much of, and then go have a scoop of ice cream afterwards because it's a birthday and we're mm-hmm. gonna, it's a nice day and we're going to celebrate a little bit, right? And so it's like, well, you know, is that one meal, is that one day's worth of eating going to be the end-all be-all of it all? But no, right? But when you look at it from the perspective of, you know, I weigh too much and I need to weigh less, you know, I'm exercising, which makes me feel a lot better, but that's not really what's going to make a dramatic difference in terms of what my weight is. It's stringing together multiple days of not overeating and generally eating relatively healthy food, right? So yesterday, I got to throw that out, right? Because I overate and I didn't eat the highest quality mix of food that I could eat, right? There are lots of other random Tuesdays which are much better food days for me than yesterday was. So, you know, so that gets thrown out, right? And, you know, that, like, damages your streak of good days in a row. And I find that, you know, in terms of actually making an improvement in weight loss requires stringing together 2 or 3 days of fairly good eating.
Right.
Which isn't starving yourself. It's just eating high quality food and avoiding, you know, the pitfalls of, you know, cookies and ice cream and 14 beers, right? You got to do that 2 or 3 days in a row, and then it seems like the scale starts to move, right? My body actually starts to lose some weight, right? So throw that away, right? Today's Wednesday. We'll start again. Maybe by Friday if I don't mess it up, right? But I just, it can be hard. There are lots of social interactions that can, people aren't forcing you to eat the wrong food, but the default is for there to be not the greatest food for you to eat.
Right.
Like, losing weight almost needs to be like a community endeavor. You know, like they say, it takes a village to raise a child. It almost takes a village to get a fat guy to lose weight. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I feel like, you know, every choice you make has consequences, but it's hard to think in terms of the choices, what do I eat today, and the consequences, I get cancer, right? Which it's hard to do that on a day-by-day basis. I can't even think what I ate this week is going to give me cancer. Being overweight this year gave me cancer, but then 20 years later,
cancer.
It can. I don't know. Is that the answer to start thinking more? Think locally, like at any given meal, is eating this pizza worth pancreatic cancer? I mean, that's messed up, but
I can't sustain thinking that deeply about my food choices. I just can't. I've tried, right? Compared to what I knew 4 or 5 years ago, I know a lot more about food choices and how they affect my personal health and what their impact likely is long term on my health and what my various food choices impact is on the environment and the world around me. Like, I understand a lot more, but at the end of the day, sometimes I'm just hungry.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing to eat at the place I'm at is, you know, bad choice number 6, right? Because it's just easy for this place to have, you know, burgers and chips, you know, cooked out on the grill. That's just what there is, right? If you want to eat something healthy, don't eat there.
Right. That's really hard to do. I never really, and I have done this before, but I try not to do this, say I'm not going to do something socially that I want to in order to prevent bad eating or drinking behaviors. But I often think about that, you know, oh, I'm invited to a birthday party Saturday night. I know if I go, I will eat bad food and I will drink lots of beer.
Because it's a celebration.
Right. Should I just not go to not put myself in that situation? I mean, the other answer is you go and just don't drink. But
Yeah, but now Scott's the anti-fun.
Right.
I mean, there's no good choice out of that.
Right? Not that, like, peer pressure to drink is a thing I'm worried about, but, you know, it's fun to drink with people.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
It's very tough. I don't know what the right answer is. I do know I had a guy, a friend of mine, who decided he was going to run a marathon. He was overweight, but he was not physically inactive. But his hobby was usually pedaling, right? Riding the bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
But he decided, you know, no, I'm going to run a marathon. And so he started training and running. And he lost weight. But when you're running that much,
you can eat whatever you want.
For months at a time, you're losing some weight. Mm-hmm. So that's almost a unique situation where you can say exercise overcomes, you know, whatever it is that you're eating.
Yeah. For me, that's awesome. That's been problematic because then the moment either A, you get injured and can't run anymore,
mm-hmm.
or B, your schedule changes in some way that you no longer have hours per day to devote to running. Now, it's hard to get off the gravy train and stop eating all these calories you've been enjoying. And, you know, you have an immediate weight gain.
Which he did.
Yeah.
Right? He ran the marathon and, you know, he lost. He looked good. Right? And then he, you know, in the couple months after, you know, he's like, well, I've been trying to watch what I'm eating more. But he's like, but I'm still gaining weight. So he had to, you know, he's still running. Right? He's bumped up his mileage. He's probably doing 10 miles a week. You know, over two or three running sessions. Mm-hmm. And I think he's found a happy medium for him. But it, you know, is real, right?
I had this problem when I did triathlon training a few years back. And so I kind of just have decided if I ever do that again, I really need to focus on the increase in calories has to be like plain food. Most runners do when they're thinking about fueling their run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they eat a bunch of like peanut butter and I don't know, pasta and stuff like that, but it's not like pizza and chips and ice cream, right?
Right.
It's I'm increasing my caloric intake of real food in order to compensate for my running. And I feel like you really have to focus on that from the start of a training program so you don't get in this bad habit of I can eat anything I want.
Yeah.
It should be more I can eat as many calories as I want, but not I can eat anything I want, from my perspective. For someone who has a weight problem, right?
Yep.
Some sort of eating disorder.
Yeah, I've been trying to do some real mileage running. It's hard. I regularly run 2 miles at a go. You know, I do that a couple times a week, but I don't think that's quite enough, right?
I think the distance or the time spent running. For me, I guess, running for 10 minutes 3 or 4 times a week will not produce the same weight loss as running for 40 minutes in a go. There's something about getting into that, like, endurance distance.
Yeah,
well, burn zone or whatever it is that really makes a difference. I always think that like time spent or miles spent.
So 10 minutes is roughly a mile, at least for me. I'm running about 10 minute miles. And I kept pushing myself to increase my distance until I got to 2 miles. And my goal since then has been to try to increase the speed that I run. Because running faster chews up a lot more calories. Like, if you run on a treadmill, some people hate it. I like it simply because the surface that I run on is much more forgiving than running on the sidewalks or the street. But the, you know, just running just a little bit faster is a lot harder in my mind, right? Like, you know, running 2 miles, you know, by the time I get half mile into the run, right, I've kind of gotten to a steady state, right? You know, I'm running I'm breathing, my heart's pumping, right? And I'm just cranking, right? And I get to the end of 2 miles, and I'm sure I could run longer, right? But, you know, there's a time commitment. You know, you're already spending maybe 30 minutes on the treadmill by the time you,
you know, warm up, cool down,
cool down and stuff, right? How much time do you want to spend? But, you know, so that's running a 10-minute mile. But just running, say, 2/10 of a mile an hour faster, right? So going from, like, 6 miles an hour to 6.2 miles an hour takes a lot more. Like, I, you know, I have to run every speed increase that I've done on the treadmill. I've had to get very comfortable at the speed I'm at. And then on my off days, I run some intervals. And I have to run those a lot faster to try to, you know, increase my cardio capacity, right? To essentially suck in oxygen and burn energy fast enough to accommodate running just a little bit faster. Like, to me, it's phenomenal how much harder it is to run faster than it is to run
longer
at the same speed. So, I know people that run a long time at really fast rates, right? And they're really good runners. It's kind of astonishing. You know, these are the people, I don't know anybody who could do the Boston Marathon in, you know, 2.5 hours, right? But there are people that run marathons in the time it takes you to watch all the movie, you know. It's crazy.
Crazy people. I'm actually thinking about doing a half marathon this fall.
Yeah.
Just because I need a reason to run 3 times a week. And training for something, I have seen this in my history, right? If I'm training for something, if I've paid the money for a race and it's on my calendar, I will work towards it. But just this vague notion of I should run more.
Not going
to
cut it.
No, it doesn't happen.
So, a friend of mine keeps pushing me to run a 5K, which would mean getting to run 3 miles, 3.2 miles or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not a bad deal.
I think it's probably a good idea.
Yeah. Running a half marathon, though.
Oh, I
It's 13 miles.
Yeah, I'm thinking...
Seems like 10 miles of pain.
Yeah. I mean, I would need a while to train. I've done enough running in the past that I'm not starting from ground zero, but I'm thinking like late October time frame. So
yeah,
I need some time.
Didn't you know somebody who was like going to run a marathon in every state or something crazy like that?
Yeah, she just ran one last weekend in Montana. She's crazy, but she like every marathon she does, pretty much she qualifies. She has a Boston Marathon qualifying time.
Yeah.
She's one of those crazy runners.
Well, if she wants to run 50 marathons, then...
Yeah.
I mean, she's kind of constantly training, right?
Right. That's an interesting... I've thought about this conceptually. You think about running 50 marathons, and how many marathons can you conceivably run in a year, and then you divide that out by how many years it's going to take to do it, and... I guess it's a good thing you can run until you die.
Well, I mean, there are people that do ultra marathons, right? Which is running way more than 26 miles.
So we'll see. I haven't committed to it yet, but I'm like 50-50 on the fence if I'm going to do this or not. I ran yesterday for the first time in a couple of weeks.
And?
Wow. It was harsh.
How far did you run?
I just ran 2 miles, and then I walked about a mile. But, hey, that's a start.
I feel like, you know, people that are doing some mileage, not even a lot of mileage, I feel like if you're doing 6 to 8 miles a week running, however fast you want to run, but running 6 to 8 miles a week, I feel like at that threshold... Or, obviously, any more than that, right? People who do that aren't fat.
Right. That's the thing.
Right? I mean, some people are more thin than others, right? But you don't see any, like...
A fat runner is essentially a transient state.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're either moving towards being a fit runner or towards a non-runner.
Right.
It's one of the two. And I've experienced this before. Like, you know, after I've gained back some weight and then I go running and I, like, it's just too hard. It's too hard to run fat. So you either have to lose weight if you want to continue to run, or you stop running.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. That's why, you know, the bare minimum really for someone in my, for me, the bare minimum for me to do this half marathon would do like a 3 month type program. And those generally start out with you running 3 miles three times a week. So what I'm going to see is how quickly can I get to the point where I'm comfortable running 3 miles three times a week. And once I get to that point, start a program and see what happens.
So maybe the right answer for me is I should, as opposed to trying to up my speed, right, because I am running 10-minute miles, which I feel like is, it's not fast, but it's not,
right,
it's respectable. I don't feel like I should be ashamed to talk to other runners and say, oh, I run 10-minute miles. They might say, oh, well, I jog and warm up at 10-minute miles, which is great.
And then you slap them.
Yeah, I don't care. Right? Do it. Then I'll run with you during your warm-up, and then when I'm, you know, completely covered in sweat and huffing and puffing, then you can do your real run.
Right.
That's fine. But running 10-minute miles, I feel like I can say I'm a runner. But maybe as opposed to trying to go faster for 2 miles, maybe what I should try to do is get to 3 miles. Run 3 miles, a 10-minute mile. That's a half hour of running.
I've always been an advocate for more distance because I feel like you have to work for distance. And speed just comes over time as you get more miles in and you lose weight. Now, doing sprints and stuff, yes, you do work to improve your speed. But for someone who's just getting into running, I feel like distance is what is more bang for your buck. Like, if I'm going to invest time, I want to invest time in improving my distance. I guess, A, because I don't really care about the speed. I'm more about finishing races, you know, without walking rather than caring about my speed.
Right.
And B, because I feel you just naturally get faster as you get more athletic and your muscles develop and you lose weight.
Yep.
So
I'll do that. I'll try to get to 3 miles twice a week because I generally run 4 times a week, but part of them, you know, half of them I run for distance and half of them I run intervals. And the intervals I'm running faster than I run for distance just to try to push my heart and lung capacity forward, right? Maybe I'll try to do that. Maybe that's a better next step for me than trying to run 2 miles faster. Because then if I can run 3 miles...
You're at a 5K, essentially.
You're basically at a 5K. You need, what, another 0.2 miles? 3.2 miles is a 5K?
3.2, yeah.
Yeah. That's my goal. Can you run 3 miles?
I could. Yeah, I can right now. You want to go? No.
I
just was limited on time yesterday. I did it over my lunch hour. So yesterday was one of those days where I was going to get up at 5:30 and I was going to run before work.
Didn't happen.
And it didn't happen. And then all morning I just felt like such a piece of crap because I didn't work out. So then at like 11:30, I was like, I'm just going to do it over my lunch hour. But by the time you run and cool down and shower and eat, and it's more of a time limit thing. But
you didn't get up yesterday because we were drinking out Monday. On Monday night.
You didn't have to bring that up.
To be fair, I ate that plate of fries on Monday and I did not feel good afterwards.
I felt terrible yesterday morning.
Yeah. So,
the next time we go out, we're gonna
end up talk at a
about
juice bar.
No, we're gonna talk about cancer first.
And there we go. Then talk about gonna, cancer, and then order like one small beer and an apple.
Okay, I think we've beat this topic to death.
But we're both committed to running 3 miles,
right?
And I'm gonna run it 3 miles twice a week. When am I gonna get there? I'm running 2 miles now.
I mean, I would argue if you can run 2 miles, you can run 3 miles. It's a mental thing. You just have to keep moving.
Man, but I was on vacation for 2 weeks, man. You gotta... Let's
give you a couple weeks.
Yeah, let's see where I am by August 1.
Okay.
When are you going to be at 3 miles 3 times a week?
I don't know. I might do it next week. I'll report back August 1st as well. By then, I'll make my decision if I'm going to do my half marathon.
Okay.
At the end of October.
Now we've got a publicly stated deadline.
Okay.
As public as this podcast is.
Right. So basically, it's just it's just between you and me.
Yeah, and your mom. Yeah.
Did you want to talk about apps? Should we wind it down? What?
Oh, yeah. I got an app.
Okay. We were going to... So I am a underuser of apps. I never use apps, and I feel like there are all these things out there that could change my life, you know, and I'm just not using them. So we talked about picking some apps, downloading them, reviewing them is just kind of a reason to explore apps. So what do you got?
So I was on vacation for 11 days, right? Motorcycle trip. So I got just a game, just a simple game. And it's free to play, and it is very clever. There are checkpoints, right? You play long enough and eventually they're like, checkpoint, right? And it saves your progress. So you can come back to it later and restart from the checkpoint. But they only unlock that functionality after you pay them money.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can play the game completely for free, but if you restart from the beginning every time unless you pay them the $3 for the in-app purchase, right? Or $2.99 for the in-app purchase. Which... when you think about it, oh, $2.99, it's expensive. It's $3. I have wasted $3 on way less interesting stuff all the time. I don't know why I have this aversion to spending $2 or $3 on an app for fun. But so I did. The game is called Does Not Commute. And it's a car driving game, right? You hold your phone or your iPad sideways, and the right turns your car to the right, and the left turns your car to the left. And they have these, like, boards, you know, with streets and buildings or whatever. And you start, there's a timer, and when you go, the car starts at one point, and then it has to exit the screen at the other point, and you have to drive it, right? And the timer is running while you drive it. The timer is not running while you're planning your route, right? And so you drive the car, you know, and it goes out. And then the game records the path that you took and the timing that you took, and then it puts that car back at the beginning. And then on the same board, you get another car that starts at a different location and has a different out. And then when you're driving that second car, the first car is going. So you eventually get 10, 12, 15 cars all going at the exact same time, starting in different locations and exiting at different locations, and they're all following your same route. So you might run into your own car. So the deeper you get into a board, the harder and harder it gets because you're avoiding the cars that you did previously. And then there's, you know, different paths, like you know, some have jumps, some have... you know, there are hills and valleys and off-road and drive through the bushes. And I mean, but in terms of it's kind of a puzzle game, requires a little bit of, you know, quote unquote,
dexterity.
Yeah. Dexterity skill. But, I don't know. It's a pleasant kind of fun diversion. It's pretty.
So you paid for it. You paid the in-app purchase. Do you think you'll still be playing it 6 months from now? Will you revisit it, or is it going to be one of those one and done, play it for a week, never touch it again?
No, I think I'll come back to it from time to time. Simply because it's each playthrough is a little bit different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because each, you know, you can always try to find a better path and so on and so forth. I don't know that it's quite as good as Alto's Adventure. I don't know if you've played the snowboarding. You have played the snowboarding game because I see you in Game Center.
Yeah.
That I come back to you with a certain regularity because that game has a certain like Zen thing going on. But it's fun. I like it. Does Not Commute.
So did you play it in front of anyone? I'm always skeptical of a game that requires accelerometer use.
No, it doesn't. It's just tapping
the screen. Oh, okay. I thought the way you were turning your hands, it was accelerometer.
No, it's just... click right.
Okay.
Click left.
It's all good.
I did not play it in front of anyone simply because that kind of feels rude to me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm interacting with you, but I'm playing a game, so
right.
Don't talk to me.
Right. I thought that it was you were having to do crazy hand motions, and that doesn't really work well playing it in public.
No. But... Does not commute. Thumbs all right, up.
Cool. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
I'll try the free version and see. I'm not big into phone games. I don't have attention for it. Or you could finish you could make your move in letterpress. In our letterpress game.
You're such a difficult opponent. I just can't, like, whip it out. I gotta think about it.
All right. Okay, well, I checked out an app called Streaks. Have you heard about this? It was an Apple Design Award winner. I had heard good things about it.
Yeah.
And it's $3.99, and I just bought it. Like, I didn't really do any research or anything. The concept of it is it's a...
It's $4!
Right.
Tell me you haven't wasted $4 in your
life. So it's like a behavior tracking, as the name implies. You're trying to get streaks of good behaviors.
Of good days of eating, for
instance. Yeah, which you were talking about earlier.
Right.
That's one you could do. That's
okay.
Not one I did. It's nice. There's kind of like a board where you define your tasks up to 6. You're limited to 6 things you can... configuring streaks of, which at first I was like, hey, you're not going to let me do as many as I want. And then I was like, no, I mean, how could you possibly,
how could you possibly
focus on accomplishing more than like 6 individual things in any given day?
6 seems like a lot, actually.
It is. But the thing is, it isn't necessarily daily. Like, you can configure them on an interval. So like my Monday, Wednesday, Friday workout class, I can say, you can define the days that you want to do it. You can define something that I want to do every other day, or I want to do once a week. So I have one task that's like a weekly thing. And that was like, I want to spend...
Is that shower?
Oh, man, I need another slot now. No, my weekly thing was I want to spend an hour working on some home improvement project that's on my to-do list.
Okay.
I did a daily one that was spend 15 minutes either cleaning or organizing, you know, something in the house, whether that be... email, that be mail, that be, you know, clean, whatever.
Right.
I did one that is drinking water every day.
I was like, drinking?
Drinking.
I don't need an app for that.
And then the one for working out, and then I did one for practicing my music for the musical I'm doing right now. I told you I'm trying to do at least, you know, like 15 minutes of practice every day. So I've been using this for a couple weeks now, and it is making a difference.
Really?
Me getting things done. It's pretty subtle. I turned off the notifications for a while. I did the notifications, and it will notify you. It tries to pay attention to when you've completed a task in the past, and it'll notify you around that time.
Sure.
Which is very cool. It's pretty sophisticated for how simple an app it is. Like, it seems like it was very well thought out. So I have the notifications turned off just because I don't feel I need that. But then it has a badge. So like right now, my badge says 5 because I have 5 tasks I haven't completed yet today. So, you know, I have it on my home screen and just kind of can keep an eye on the badge number.
It's kind of visually there.
Yeah. But subtle. For the health stuff, it integrates into Apple Health, which is cool. I have a water logging. I use an app called Waterlog to log my water. That puts it in Apple Health, and then this pulls it out of Apple Health. So once I hit my 3rd Nalgene bottle logged,
done.
It completes my task, which is cool. It's one of the first really useful, you know, interactions with Apple Health I've seen for me personally.
So Streaks.
Yeah. I give it 2 thumbs up. Like, I'm going to keep using it. I haven't been great. I mean, I think my longest streak is like 6 days on my water. So, and everything else I've broken, you know, only ever done 2 or 3 days in a row.
Has it made you, like, have you been doing something or not doing something, and then you see your streak and you're like, all right, fine, I'll go do, you know, I'll go spend the 15 minutes, whatever, right now before I go to bed or whatever. Has it made you do that?
It has. And that's where it has actually, you know,
that's where it's made a difference. Yeah.
Right.
I should try that.
So it's cool. I like it. It's pretty simple. So that's why I'm sure some people get it and it's like, I paid $4 for this. But it's, I like an app that does exactly what you need it to do without...
with nothing else.
Right.
And it's $4.
Right. So yeah.
$4, that's it. That's almost free.
Pretty much.
Cool. All right. Well, I think our horse is officially beat to death today.
Okay.
So I'll check out your app. I don't know if you want to check out this one or not.
No, I do.
You do have to pay, you know.
No, I got
for it. And then maybe we can just do a quick update at a later date. And then pick another app for some point down the road.
Yeah. Cool.
All right.
Till next week.